Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron time and time again.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 149. This week I have a couple different guests. One, I got Aaron Fennel back. We had an auction happen here over the week. And I think we're in that time of the year where we start paying attention to these auctions more than we've had in the past, just because we're at that kind of peak auction time. Headed here towards the end of the year when most auction activity, and usually these August time frame auctions kind of start to set the tone for what we're going to see happen throughout the end of the year. And also I have Steve Hawkins on here, and he is a brother of John Hawkins, and he was a farmer out there in, or is a farmer out there in central Illinois, and I had the pleasure to talk with him over some stuff he sees happening in his general area. Aaron, how are you, buddy?
Good, man. What's going on in your world today?
Oh, it's just a fun-filled day in the equipment business. You know, you can't get enough of it.
That's right. Bang your head against the wall until you break through and do it again.
Yeah, and then scoot over 6 inches and try to do it again.
There you go.
All right, man. So Goldman's had an auction here, and it was their big one. They have one usually in August, and then they usually have, well, summertime, like mid to late summer. And then they've got another one towards the end of the year, typically, and this was that mid to late summer one. And they had quite a list of stuff go across there. There's several dealers that put stuff through there, and they had quite a laundry list of equipment. It's a two-dayer, and that's usually not something you see with the Sullivan group. Anyway, they try to get it
right.
So there was quite a bit on there. So I guess give me your reaction to what you saw there, and give me an idea of what kind of what you thought the tone was and what you feel like the overall kind of outcome of it was.
Well, first thing I'd like to point out, they've done that two-day thing before, and they don't do that because they have 2 days worth of 16 and 17 model year equipment. There's just a lot of stuff there in general, whether it's a 190 XT Alice or a 4440 times 10, there's just a lot of iron there, and they do it all, trucks, trailers, the whole damn work. So that's part of why that's a two-dayer. Now, there was some later model equipment on there, quite a fair chunk, and you know, by and large, there was it was about what you would expect for the market we're in. Right. Now, was it the auction prices of last December? No, but they haven't existed since last December either. Right. So, you know, for what auctions have been doing this year, they were kind of hit or miss, I would say, till about May. June, they started getting tougher. As far as just strictly auction values. And they've just kind of been on that tougher course ever since. So, when we hit, and for that little glimmer of hope we had when corn was over $4.
Yeah.
That didn't have much of an effect on the auction market. I think it had a bigger effect for dealers being able to move stuff than it did auctions.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah.
And now we're down. Now we're back to paying the elevator to take the corn off the farm.
Right.
So, yeah. So the auctions are reflecting that.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, too. If you take a look at just kind of the overwhelming amount of stuff that we see out there, I mean, there's a lot of guys that price, you know, price their corn in, locked in some contracts at over $4. You know what I mean? There are a lot of guys that were $4.10, $4.15, $4.20, you know.
Oh, yeah.
There are some opportunities for guys to do that. And I think that that's what we're seeing now. We're kind of seeing some residual effects of that. Because I'll be honest with you, I mean, for the auction, for the market that we're in right now, and what we saw on that auction, I would probably echo what you said. I don't think that there was really anything there. There weren't any barn burners, right? There was nothing out there like, holy shit, that bought retail plus 10. There's none of that, right?
No.
But there was a lot of just like steady, consistent numbers that you would see, that we've seen throughout the year, right?
There's nothing. Right. Oh, yeah.
And it was not, there wasn't a downer by any means. I don't think that there was any real, you know, I just think that there's a lot of, it seemed like there's some shocked people out there when it came to what they saw. And maybe it's because we follow it and we pay attention to it a lot more. But I don't know. It felt like to me that there was not a lot to write home about on that particular auction.
No, I would agree with that. There was nothing that would get you all fired up and be like, holy cow, I can't believe that brought that, in a positive sense or in a negative sense. Right. You know, it was just kind of a run-of-the-mill auction, you know. Mm-hmm. And I talked to some guys that were there, and they said that, yeah, maybe they spent a little longer on each piece than normal to get there, but they still got there.
Right.
And, you know, keep in mind that Colonel Dan, he spends the least amount of time of anybody in the country at times on a piece. He just hammers her through. So he just spent a normal amount of time on stuff.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, there was nothing that the sky is falling. There was nothing that, wow, we're on a huge uptick.
Right.
It was just the market we're in right now. And you're right. I mean, we eat, sleep, live, and breathe this stuff all the time. So
right.
It's probably different for us than, you know, guy that, you know, average farmer or whoever that, you know, it's not his job to follow what the hell the auctions are doing and what the market is at. It's our job. So.
Yeah. Now I just think there's it's an auction too. And one thing I would say about some of the stuff, I looked at kind of, you know, I didn't like dive into it hardcore, but I kind of glossed over it and kind of went back through some of the pieces that would impact we see happening out there and impact our business, you know, and I thought a lot of that stuff was well within that. You know, I've always said that, you know, retail price is in this market that we're in right now is kind of bouncing around out there. And I, you know, it could be anywhere from some of that stuff we see, guys. I've watched plenty of auctions where there's a dealer 10 miles away from the auction site, and the corn head that they've had for 2 years was sold for, was they're asking $15,000 less for it than the one that sold at the auction, and there's literally nothing different about it condition-wise. And so it brought more than retail value as far as that goes. And then some of the stuff I hear you watching, they're within that 10-20% of retail, which is kind of that sweet spot you want to stay in. So
right.
But on the same hand, were there some stuff that was a little bit lower than probably we've seen in the past? Absolutely, it's an auction, right? You're going to have those. Well, there's some stuff that was higher than what we thought. I would say so too. But again, it's an auction. You know, you never know what you're going to get when bidding day.
Right. Well, and keep in mind, when you have an auction of that caliber,
right,
the big stuff always brings less. The little stuff is always way out of everybody's budget, but somebody ends up with it.
Right.
You know, that's just how they go.
Yep. Yeah. So it's, I don't know. It's just, it's an auction, right? Some of them are better than others, and some are worse than others. And I would say, as far as I'm concerned, if 10 is man, we're going to see the best prices ever, and one is, holy crap, the sky's falling, I would get this in a 5 or a 6.
Right.
Kind of right there. I don't think it's too out of control either way. So,
yep.
Yeah. So, all right, so plenty of stuff going on in the marketplace right now. So we're at that time of the year where we're looking at fall harvest now, and with the amount of hail that we've had in our immediate area, there are some guys kind of peeking their heads up a little bit. I think it's talking to doing something with some choppers that we got. We got a handful of choppers on our lot, which is a handful too many. But
right.
But we do have some activity on those choppers. So, and I think there's going to be a lot of corn chopped this year in our area that we wouldn't have seen in the past. So I guess talk about that a little bit, what you see happening out there. Sounds like in the areas going to have corn, they didn't get hail damage. There's a little bit of concern about heat units now and just making sure that things actually get finished out like they normally should. So I guess, talk about what you hear out there and what you see happening with the harvesting in the program.
Yeah, I know there around Elias had a lot of hail too, west of town. And I talked to a guy the other day, and you know, they got up until 2 weeks ago when that hail hit, it was probably the best looking corn that I had seen. And you know, it took about 20 minutes and it's green broom handles out in the field is it. And they're chopping that. And I noticed today driving by the chopper sitting there in the field. So
yeah,
they're going to wipe that on out of here. But I know there's been more talk kind of throughout the northwestern region of our area that, yeah, there is going to be quite a bit chopped. You know, of course, most all these guys have something to chop all the time anyway. They probably weren't planning on that pivot or those two pivots, but
right,
that's the name of the game now. So I know that's going on. The heat thing is absolutely imperative at this point. And today I think it was 75 degrees for the high. That ain't going to cut it. We are, in our area out here, almost our entire area, our territory is the word I'm looking for. Almost our entire territory is about 4,000 feet. Some a little bit higher, some a little bit lower. And we are notorious for that way too early of a freeze. You know, I've been out west here for 12 years, and I know it's happened two or maybe even three times. This, and that's in a normal year where things get going and everything's fine and we have our heat early like we normally have. We didn't start summer in this country till July, you know. And I don't think, you know, I know our more southern stores, they were doing better off early than we were in the northern half, but it's still not good anywhere, you know, as far as that goes. Everybody needs the heat, and we are sitting way better than a heck of a lot of places in the country. You know, I know of a lot of June-planted corn in the central and eastern corn belt that, you know, they're in the same weather pattern we are. I know a lot of guys going to Farm Progress this week, and it's going to be 75 all week there, too.
Right.
We're getting in kind of dire straits here for, you know, it's almost the end of August, brother. We're running out of days to crank some heat into this stuff, and it'd be one hell of a year to have a good Indian summer. I know that.
Yep, no doubt about it. So I think there's going to be, it could open up some opportunities for a lot of dealers that are sitting on maybe some equipment that they wouldn't typically sell because of dairy prices, for example. There could be some opportunities to sell some choppers out there to individuals that wouldn't necessarily be in the market for them.
And right,
there's not enough custom guys out there to kind of service the overwhelming amount of folks that are going to want to chop that stuff up. So,
yeah. So. Yeah, because I know the custom guys are way, way booked up.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on out there, so. All right, man. Well, I think that's what we wanted to hit on today, was just get kind of talk about that auction, and then kind of hit on some stuff we see happening here with harvesting, with just kind of what we see happening out there with some weather patterns we see coming up. So, anything else you want to throw in there before we shut it down?
You know, I guess I can't think anything off the top of my head. I don't think how about that all that stuff that was going on the Pro Farmer Tour, that guy threatening the USDA, and they got pulled off the tour and all that.
Yeah.
Damn, it's one of the, I saw someone on Twitter mention that, it really sucks out here, guys, but, stuff like that don't help. And I shouldn't laugh about it, because that is a serious deal, but I I'm guessing what probably happened is they did their, first five stops and come up with this super high yield, and he probably just lost his mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been kind of paying attention to that back and forth and trying to see what some of the final numbers were and those kind of things. But, it'd be interesting to see what happens. I mean, the markets aren't reacting to anything too crazy, so there's not a whole lot.
Right. So. But we sold every kernel of corn in the U.S. to Japan today, so we're going to be fine.
All of this year's crop and the next 17 years' crops, I think, is what I understood it right.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Yep, whether they're feeding fish with it and just dumping it in the ports when they get there or what, don't matter. As long as the check's good.
Yeah, that.
And I'm fairly certain Japan's check is good.
Yeah, that and all the beef that we've got too. So
there you go.
Things are humming along quite well. So.
Yes, sir.
Well, I have really nothing else to add to anything. So if people want to,
I don't either.
People want to reach out to you. How would they do that?
I'm on Twitter at Aaron Fintel, if you want to pronounce it that way. Or call me or text me, 308-760-1193.
Right on. All right, buddy. Safe travels, and we will talk to you soon.
All right, brother. Peace out.
See ya.
Moving Iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. Today my guest is Steve Hawkins, and if you recognize that name, you probably heard his brother John on here from time to time, and something I want to get into a little bit as well, but Steve is the farmer of the family, and John is the equipment guy of the family. So, Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Casey.
Tell me a little bit about who you are, tell me about your operation, where you're at, and all those kind of things, and kind of give the listeners here a little background on yourself.
Okay, yeah. Again, my name's Steve Hawkins. Farm west of Galesburg, between Galesburg and Monmouth, Illinois. That's, if you look at a road map and see where 74 bends from and goes straight north towards the Quad Cities, that's where we are. Farm corn and soybeans, probably this year, a little closer to a 60-40 mix. Normally we are in the 50-50 crop rotation, and predominantly grow between 110 to 116 day corn and late twos to late three soybeans.
Gotcha. All right, so this year has been one of those years where there's been really no lack of news or challenges that face everyone in agriculture right now. So talk about early this year when you were getting started. All right, so we had all this rain, we had all these issues, all these different things going on. How did you overcome all of those things, and how far behind did you get, and how did you overcome getting caught back up and those kind of things?
Sure. Well, I guess one of the things, you asked about me, and I did have my son graduate from college in December after finishing up playing some football and all that, graduated in December and came back to the farm. And so along with that, he's got his first year farming in this wonderful year. I keep telling him if you can make it this year, you can make it any year.
Right.
So what we started off pretty wet. We had we put anhydrous on pre-plant the week before Easter, kind of mudded it in, had mud over tanks, ended up washing the tractor thoroughly on Good Friday when we finished anhydrous, and kind of thought, well, we're going to need to dry out a little bit before we get started into planting. And ended up hooking up the planter on Saturday, and by watching, I subscribed to BAM, weather forecast, kind of watching their forecast, you know, their 10-day, two-week forecast, I thought, well, we may need to get rolling a little sooner than what I had planned. So we started planting at noon Monday after Easter and ran that thing as hard as we could. We had a couple 20-hour days, a couple 16-hour days, knew that we were in a short window and managed to get everything in pretty good shape. Had a few wet holes that we kind of, you know, we got them planted, but they were on the verge of, man, what are we going to have left? But we got everything planted by the end of the day on Friday, and I think, you know, it was Sunday, that next Sunday after Easter when it took, you know, loose rain and then it was mid-May before we had any chance to get in to try any beans or anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got our corn planted probably two and a half weeks later than we would have liked to normally shoot for, you know. We usually shoot somewhere in the 10th or so, 10th to 14th to start and get wrapped up, that time frame. Beans, we planted 110 acres of beans. I want to say, oh, it was it's the same 2 days in May that everybody was able to work, I think, and replanted 50% of them. And then finally got the beans wrapped up, June 6th, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we got everything in.
Yep. So the that BAM weather, you know, is one of those things I follow. We use them here to dealership a little bit. It's amazing from what their forecasts are compared to like the apps you get on your phone, right? And
this, yes.
I mean, there's a distinct difference between, you know, kind of those adages, you know, you get what you pay for. And that service is one of those ones where I would look back and like, man, this is worth the money because, like you said, there were a lot of windows they were calling for. They were like, hey, guys, there's not going to be any rain here. There's going to be rain here. The temperature, this, that, and the other thing. And you'd look at the app on your phone, and it wasn't anywhere near what they were saying. And it was definitely a tool that I think should be more utilized. So talk about that a little bit and your decision to go with BAM Weather or one of those other weather services out there like that. I mean, what drove you to invest the money to do that?
Well, I just I did kind of a trial a year ago, mm-hmm. and got the full blown subscription, and they have so much information, and it was information overload, and talked with them a little bit when it came time to renew, and I was like, you know, I just don't need that much information. They said, you know, we hear you, we think we have what works for you, because I think, you know, I was getting 4 and 5 things a day, and it was just so much information and things that I had, like, just quite frankly, couldn't understand.
Right.
And we got to a thing where I got to get a kind of a two emails a day service here that gives me sometimes three, depending on if we got a little severe weather or whatever coming on or something that, you know, kind of catches them, hey, we're seeing this, email. But, you know, I get the kind of a near-term forecast early, and then I get a longer-term forecast, like a two-week forecast. You know, like usually that first one I get by 5:45 Central time, and then I get the second one around 8:30, and gives me both, you know, the near-term and the longer-term two-week time frame weather. And I tell you what, that I'm so thankful that they had a package that worked for us, because I tell you what, I paid for, you know, I think I paid for this year's subscription and probably 5 or 6, 7 more. No, it's probably going to be more than that, just by following their thing to get it planted there that last whole week of April.
Yeah, technology is amazing, and utilizing that technology is such a key factor anymore, especially with these tighter windows we've had over the past 2 or 3 growing seasons. It's been a, especially when it comes to planting, it's been a struggle. So,
yeah.
So let's talk about this a little bit. So Monday, this is it's August 18th right now on Sunday, and so last Monday, the USDA came out with their WASDE report, and I would love your opinion of what you thought of that report and what you think of the direction the market took on the subsequent days?
Well, I will give you kind of an overview of my thoughts on things, and I am of the one the last 4 or 5 years have really scratched my head at a number of these USDA reports. And over that time frame, I have gone to the idea that I would be happy with the trade coming out with their estimate, you know, their high range, their low range, and an average, and going with that. I mean, those are the businesses that are going to make it or break it on whether their information is correct in the positions they've took. Because I think the market kind of did a good job ahead, you know, because we had that fall off ahead of the report, and I think they did a good job of getting kind of a handle on where things are. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we kind of get it's almost a double negative report. You know, it was negative in the aspect of acres and negative in the aspect of yield, and it was just, you know, that's what, in my opinion, threw everything haywire. But, you know, I'm not seeing I know there's a lot of guys, because they leaked, the USDA leaked the information kind of what the MFP program was going to be. So some guys probably planted some acres that they weren't going to. But the yield is just incredible. You know, we've been very fortunate in our neighborhood, in our few counties, you know, this part of Western Illinois. I mean, I don't imagine a lot different than a lot of guys, but we got a 5-year corn yield of 239 bushels an acre. That's on my farm, that's dry 15% of marketable yield, and a 67 soybean 5-year average. And I think I'm a good 20% off of that. And where I'm going with this is, if some of the better areas have their 20% off, then does that mean that national yield, you know, is going to come down, right? You know, 10, 15, 20%. I mean, I know there's good spots, and according to my brother that's traveled a vast amount, and I've been to Oklahoma and Hot Springs, Arkansas, to Chicago a number of times, and Indianapolis. My son drove across Iowa out towards Omaha and thought Iowa looked fairly decent, but, I mean, east and south, I thought we were in a pretty good spot, you know.
Right. Yeah, there is a.
So I don't see how they're coming up with the yield.
I'm right there with you. I drove across. I met John out at a conference in July, and I drove across all of Nebraska, all of Iowa, and however far into Illinois Peoria is. So about halfway, I would assume, kind of right there in the middle. And you know, depending on what side of the road you're on, and really depending on the height of the corn, all the soybeans you can see down the row still. Every soybean field I went across looked exactly the same. So I'm kind of the same camp as you are. I'm kind of curious to see what they've done. I've got, you know, Sean Hackett on here, talks about one of my analysts that come on, and he was on here, the podcast I just released on Friday. He was talking about 93 and I think in 95, they both reduced, the USDA reduced the overall yield estimate by 13 bushels an acre and 11 bushels an acre respectively both those years. So, and he pointed out, you know, it's kind of hard to have 169 bushel yield when the majority of the corn was planted on June 1st. So it's just, you know, we just see that kind of things. And there's still a lot of acres out there. That's the thing about the report that bugs me a little bit, is that a lot of these pre-event acres that they allowed people to go back in and plant those into corn for silage or whatever else they were going to do with it, obviously not make grain with it, but they counted that stuff as planted acres, and then they did their normal reduction of harvested acres like you would see any other year. Well, it's a completely different ball game right now. So,
yeah,
as you look towards,
I even saw something.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I saw an email on Friday, and I was trying to pull it up on my computer, and evidently it didn't come through there, but they did that digital yield where they use the satellite images, and I want to say it was much lower as well than what the government had for yield. So
yeah, it's just it's a crazy deal, you know. So I'm really looking forward to the Pro Farmer Tour that starts here on Monday, and as it starts kind of heading across the countryside. So I mean, I guess kind of what's your thought? Do you think there's going to be a significant difference between what they come up with and what the USDA says?
Well, I think so. We had, I just think from, walking out in our cornfield, it's going to be significantly different. We pollinated pretty close on time. 4th of July, we had 1.8 inches of rain and 4 showers that lasted a total of 15 minutes. So most of it ran down the ditch, but, so we had 0.2 on the 18th of July, and we had 0.5 on, August 5th, and then we just had 0.7 when we were supposed to, I think, forecast for 1.5. We got 0.7 out of this last bunch that went through. What I saw on the 4th or shortly after the 4th when I went out to check for applying fungicide, we had a lot more yield potential at that time than we do when I was, I got back from a little trip here this last week and walked out in. And, we've got some serious tip back going now. So,
yeah.
I think crop, the crop tour, Pro Farmer guys, when they get out and get walking and start looking at some ears and everything, it'll be good. The other thing I can't ever figure out is how, you go to all these different seed things during the winter and everything, and the agronomists and everybody tells you how the seed in the bag has a potential of 500 bushels per acre, and it's the environment and the farmer starts doing things to it to bring it down. And with that being said, wouldn't good to excellent never get any higher?
Right.
Yeah. If you talk with the agronomists and everything, I don't know that good to excellent ever get any higher. And a lot of farmers that I talk to, they're like, how does it get better? It's been rolled up. How does it get better? It got to rain. There's the stress has been applied to it. You can't take it off,
Right. Yep. Yeah, it's funny how that does change. It goes from, a certain percentage is good to excellent, and the next week comes out and it goes up 10% or 5% or whatever the number is. And it is kind of crazy how that would go from being average to good or excellent after that. So,
yeah.
Funny how that works. So let's talk about, give me your opinion on what's happened with this trade deal. My opinion is I think we've got two hard-headed guys that are going to, neither one of them are going to blink, and I don't know for sure how that's going to work out for either one of them. So, and we're kind of stuck here in the middle with what's going on. So talk about what you see happening in the, with the trade deal, and I guess give me your opinion of what you see happening there.
Oh, goodness. That's above my pay grade, but, as a farmer, I think we always, we're fairly patriotic.
Oh, yeah.
More so than a lot of segments. I think we want definitely what's best for the country. I think at times we get a little, or I get anyway, I'll speak for myself, get a little aggravated about putting stuff out in the media and getting people stirred up and causing swings and everything like that, but we don't need to. We get things that are counterproductive to the getting a trade deal done for the grains, and then the next thing it's like, well, it's going to be okay, and then if something comes out and it hammers the livestock producers, and it's just I just assume that we lock the guys in a room and make them get something done, kind of go back to thinking of an old episode of MASH where Hawkeye Pierce drives up to the peace talks and tries to talk to the two sides and says, listen here, you need to get something done. And I think every one of us here in the middle of the country would urge that to happen. Other things start going wrong with this trade deal, and we had an economy that was kind of half turning around, and we were thinking about stuff, and it's starting to slide. And I think from, you know, my neighbors and everything, we'd just like to see the deal done. And we know there's, you know, so many bushels of beans that are going to need to be used in the world, but it sure would be nice to be the first option again than the last place they have to go to.
Yeah. No, totally agree with what you're saying there. We do need to have some level playing field out there, and I think that's what we're trying to get done. It's just a little pain that goes along with that. I will say this, though, and this has been my opinion on this trade thing for quite a while, is that, there's no doubt about it. The ag sector is obviously getting hit the hardest, and that's there's no one can deny that. But on the other side of that, with African swine fever and the different stuff going on in China right now, when it comes to that, you got to kind of wonder a little bit if the soybean price wouldn't be fairly close to what you see now anyway, just because there's 40 to 50%, you know, depending on who you talk to and what you see out there, 40 to 50% of those of the largest hog producing country on the planet, has been decimated. Right, it's been gone. They're dead. Yep. They don't have them anymore. So they need half as many soybeans as they need anyway. Right. So there's
I agree.
Kind of makes you wonder a little bit if there wouldn't be a similar price to what you see now, regardless of trade or not. All right, so this is the one thing I want to talk to you about, because it's kind of being the dealer and the farmer and kind of getting together here. Your brother John works for Martin Sullivan, a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. John's one of those guys that's taught me more than I taught him, so he's a real smart cat when it comes to what's going on in this business. So what's it like having having your brother be the dealer and you be the farmer? How those conversations start and how do they finish?
Well, I'll tell you that all the neighbors think I get absolutely the best price around, and that's why their trades cost so much. I can tell you that. And I can tell them that it's not the case. I get the price, and the one thing, you know, that John has done a really, really good job with me, and it's the fact that sometimes I stop in his office and talk to him, and other times it happens to be around the Thanksgiving table, but he has done an extremely good job of just talking with me and asking my plans, listening to what my thoughts and ideas. Now with Matt back, we're talking about different technology, things that Matt sees. We're talking about what our goals are 5 years from now. And then we talk about how we'd like to come about those goals, and whether it's a piece of equipment or a piece of, a tractor or a combine or a tillage piece. And we talk about it. And usually, sometime in the future, sometimes if it's something that we're looking at doing a little sooner, he'll give me a call and say, hey, I've located one of these things. We got one in on trade. I think it's what you're looking at. You want to come look at it. Same thing, maybe something a little further down the, and he's got a year and a half or something like that, and when the right piece comes in, he'll say, hey, this is what we got. You want to come look at it? And then we, do the normal trade thing that anybody does, but he's done such a good job of trying to understand the operations of Matt and my operation. And I think, if I understand, if guys are willing to kind of share that with him, with other guys as well. I've heard of some other farmers around that have had a good experience with that. And I think that makes the biggest deal is the desire to work together, you know, have a partnership. And I've talked with some other things, experiences I've had in the dealership, and we've talked about things and about how I would like things to happen, or I would see things. And I want them to make money, because if I have a part breakdown at, 7:30 at night on a Friday, and my dealership's healthy and good, I can make that call. And if I'm a good customer, that guy behind the parts desk might stay there just a tad bit longer for me to run in there in a dash, and pick up a part. Same thing, I just think it's a good, strong relationship. And he's my little brother. I most of the good stuff that he knows, I taught him anyway.
Well, of course. Absolutely. That's what I said about my little brother, too. Absolutely. Absolutely.
He may have a few scars on his head because I told him he could jump off the porch or something like that when he was 2 or 3 years old. But, that's just big brother stuff, making him tough.
It's the humor of it, right? That's the part of being a big brother. That's fun, right?
That's right.
All right. So one more question for you, and we'll wrap this up.
Mm-hmm.
When you take a look towards the end of this year, going into the first, this last quarter of the year, going into the first quarter of the year, what are some of the positives that you see out there for you and your operation, and what are some of the negatives you see out there?
Well, I think, the positive is that I've got my son farming with me. It's a dream I've had for a long time. My dad shows up every day in the office, and we talk about things. I get to have the greatest profession, work with some of the best, most honest people, around, from my grain dealer to my equipment dealer to my seed guy, my chemical guy. This year with things, and things went pretty good for us. But as trying as things were, those people that we do business with really did all they could. And the positive is that, we work in a great industry that it's competitive. It's competitive. Don't get me wrong. It's competitive. But everybody has everybody's back. So I think, that's a strong positive. The negative is, I think everybody's cash flows are going to be tighter, and some of the things that we may have wanted to do and some of the changes that maybe we're planning, have to push back a year or so. But all in all, we do have it pretty darn good. I think that's the thing, and just pray daily that, neighbors and guys all around keep their chin up, and we do have a lot to be thankful for, even though the stuff here on the horizon is a little tough right off the bat. I think we just have a tremendous amount to be thankful for in this industry.
Yep. Nope. Totally agree. That's good stuff, man. So, well, Steve, I really, really appreciate you you taking time to be on this podcast, and I really appreciate your support out there. I see you post that koozie out there every once in a while, of keeping your keeping your refreshments cold there. It's probably the coldest koozie on the market, wouldn't you say?
It is, and I'm getting ready. Once we get this conversation, we got. I think we're going to have some homemade pizza, and I'm going to enjoy that koozie here in a little bit.
Right on. Well, I really appreciate your support, and I look forward to hopefully talking to you again. Maybe when you start picking some corn and cutting some beans out there, I'll give you a shout back, and you can let me in on how yields look and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, we'll be happy to talk with you again, Casey. Thanks for the chance.
All right. Well, Steve, take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you down the road, man.
Very good.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at Moving Iron Podcast at movingironpodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Nellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum.
please visit movingironllc.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and globalagnetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour, out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here.